know you're broken hearted, cause the piece you're hoping for is off the scenes apart.
Welcome to We Love No Other, the fourth episode of the Rebooted Podcast. I am Robert Rosenthal. I have a very special guest tonight, and we're going to get right to it. You know him from Twitter as Bob Zupke. I know him from Twitter as Bob Zupke. We will all know him from Twitter as Bob Zupke because, let me just go back for a bit. People may remember when I started the blog 2009, for the first two and a half years, basically, I did not use my name. I went by, anybody remember, Critical Mass. So anything written on the blog, or even if you followed my Twitter account, the name was not Robert, the name was not anything else, the name was Critical Mass. Because, I don't know if you know this, it's a little, you know, when you have a job and you have other things going in your life, a nom de plume is a way to get around that. And so that's what my guest has chosen to do, and I respect the hell out of that because it's something I did for years. I want to maintain a life, and I want to maintain an internet personality, and I totally get that. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Bob Zupke. Let's start, Bob. I'm just going to call you Bob, and I hope that's not weird for you. This is the Robert and Bob Show.
Works. It works for me.
I'm going to start with this. How did you choose to go with Zupke when you started a Twitter account?
Yeah, I don't even really know. I knew I wanted to maintain at least some level of anonymity. And I think I expected to just create this account that had, you know, 50 people on it or whatever that were following me, and went with Bob Zupke, and then just started kind of, you know, espousing my opinions at that point and kind of gain more followers, and then it kind of blew up a little bit beyond what I imagined. But yeah, no good story with the Bob Zupke.
Okay, good. Well, I like it that way because I had no... I used the name that my buddies had used on the back of my softball jersey, which was Critical Mass, as my choice of what I was going to be. And I stole a lion eye from somebody on a lion eye board in like 2003, and they had dropped the name and disappeared. And I'm like, that's a good name. I'm going to take it. So I'm right there with you. So I guess I like this. So when did you... So I had a moment where Zook read something from the blog at a press conference, and Lindsay Wilhite of Daily Herald wrote about it. And that was like a, you know, suddenly I see all these Twitter followers, and suddenly I see there's all this more interaction with the blog. And that was like this moment, especially on Twitter, where my Twitter account really grew. Like, who's this guy? Who's this blogger? What did he write? You know, all this stuff. So what was your... I know that feeling of, I was going to talk, I thought it'd be like 50 people following, and suddenly I've got 600, wait, I have 1,000 followers. Why do people care what I say? Did you have a moment? Like, I tweeted something and it went like this, and Illini fans paid attention to me, or how did that work?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of any like big ones. There was one tweet that sort of went semi-viral, I think during a Rutgers game or something, and it got on ESPN or something like that.
Really?
I actually had a friend of mine send it to me, not knowing that I was the actual person who handles the account. So
nice. That is it right there.
So that was one of them. And then, you know, there've been a couple of, I mean, it's all like, you know, if you get retweeted by Robert or something, you get 10 times as many likes. So, I mean, it's that kind of thing. I think that, just slowly over the years, you start building up the followers.
Yeah. Yeah. And what was that like for, like, It's a weird thing of, I mean, even when I started the blog, it was kind of for my friends, and I'm just writing. I didn't tell anybody about it and this and that. So as it started to grow, I never planned to do this and like quit my job and make this my career or anything else. It just happened, and it just started to route that direction. What was it like for you? It was suddenly like, man, I got all these followers, and people are like tweeting at me during a game of like, what do you think about this? I was like, wait, I'm supposed to give it, like, I need to be on, and I'm gonna have to watch every game, and I've got to give my opinion. And what, you know, what's that like for you?
You feel a little bit more pressure, I guess, but you know, for me, not a whole lot's changed. You know, I followed it religiously. I followed recruiting religiously, you know, all for over the last really 20 years. you know, ever since like the, I mean, I remember being on IlliniBoard.com like back in the Brumby days, you know, around, you know, probably almost 20 years ago, reading about like Daniel Brown from Maywood. Just like scouring around for anything recruiting related. And so I've been following that for about as long as it's, you know, as long as it's been on the internet. Then just, I've been just obsessed with Illinois football really for about as long as well. So it's been, you know, it's been that, it's just been, it was kind of an outlet, and it's kind of stayed that way for me.
Yeah. So when did, like you, we were chatting earlier, what's your kind of Illini origin story? Like, you know, for me, I always say it's the 83-84 season. It was the Rose Bowl followed by the, you know, the run to the Elite Eight. And it was like, okay, you know, this is going to be the thing I'm going to do forever. And so what was your, you know, what's your early and what was the team for you and how did that go?
I'm trying to think of like the one that I really like. I mean, it was probably like the Micron PC Bowl team that like, yes, I remember just being like more, you know, getting a little bit more into it than I had before, yeah, that sort of thing. And then, you know, and then I think it was always, football always appealed to me a bit more than basketball just because of the recruiting component. And, you know, you follow 25 recruitments every year, you know, 25 kids that have signed and, you know, as opposed to two or three. And, so that whole thing appealed to me. And then just, you know, I think I probably prefer football as a sport as well. And so it's always been Illinois football for me. I'm probably one of the 17 or whatever.
yes. Excellent. I'll send you a shirt. What's your Illini football moment then? Like, I have this very specific Kraft Fight Hunger Bowl thing, which is really weird and awkward, but it was just this moment for me and for the blog, and it's right about the time I went from critical mass to just Robert. But what's your, you know, like, I love Illini football because, you know, like, what's your moment? Is it the Rose Bowl team? Is it Sugar Bowl? What's your moment?
Yeah, I mean, Rose Bowl team. I was all aboard the Zook bandwagon back in those days. You know, just with the like the excitement around recruiting and, yep, you know, having Juice as kind of the you know, face of the program and that sort of thing. And I mean, I was all in at that point. So that was probably one of them. You know, I mean, I vividly remember climbing over the fence at Memorial Stadium on the East practice field. I think it was like me, Lauren Tate, and I was in college at the time, me and Lauren Tate watching a practice. And then eventually I got kicked out because like, I didn't have any sort of media, yep, credential or, you know, I mean, it was like, I mean, so it's hard to pin it down to one, was, you know, it's kind of a plethora,
yes,
but you know, the Rose Bowl team for sure was special to me.
Yeah. So, when did you it's kind of an awkward question. Like what was your, I need to start a Twitter account? Like, was it just like, hey, there's Twitter accounts and I have things to say? Was it like, hey, my buddies told me, man, your tweets during games are great, or your texts are great. You should put this stuff out there. You know, everybody has a, you know what? I'm gonna start Twitter. So like, why did you choose to be like, you know what? I'll have an account.
I wish it was the encouragement of other people. I wish I could point to that, but no, it was, you know,
it was pure vanity.
I mean, essentially. you know, I've got friends that can talk about, you know, Illinois football pretty, you know, I mean, some of them can talk about depth charts, things like that, but probably not enough to, you know, to engage like on a daily basis. And, you know, and no one wants to hear about, you know, our backup left tackle in July. You know, none of my friends do anyway. So it was more that, you know, I was just looking for sort of a like-minded group of people, and I've obviously got a lot of my own opinions that I felt, mm-hmm, like I could get out there. Sure. And so that was kind of it. You know, I started it shortly after Lovey joined. And so, my tenure is kind of you know, I think it's about as long as Lovey's at this point.
Yeah.
Might last a little longer, but we'll see.
We'll see. Let's get into it then, because that's why we're here. I'm gonna ask it this way, because this was my thought today. So last year, you know, I have this date, October 12th, 2019, you know, everything's going to turn and this and that. And October 12th comes and we lose to Michigan and we're 2-4 or whatever we were at the time. And it's over and that's the moment. And I walk out of the press box with resignation. And I, even that week, I'm just writing like, man, why, like, there was so much building up to this and now I have to go bury the body. And it's, you know, that's that. And, you know, we just got killed by Minnesota and we've got destroyed by Michigan. We're about to lose to Wisconsin. It's over, blah, blah, blah. So, that's why, like, the Wisconsin win for me was like, wait, not dead? Like, I had resigned that entire week of like all this buildup and like me screaming, hold, hold, hold. And then it got to, nope. Not happening. So then we win 4 in a row. I go after the Michigan State game and I literally write the words, the rebirth of Illinois football. Like I am flying high and now 4 losses in a row. So I'm back to like checking the pulse again. Like, yeah. Oh, nope. I think it was, nope. I think what I went through back during Michigan was the thing I should have gone with. So
yeah.
It, like, I mean, I guess we have to wait till this Saturday because maybe Wisconsin is just really good and Mertz is a superstar. But is it like, I mean, that was bad. And is,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
if we don't lose, if we lose badly this weekend, like, that's that. I mean,
it's probably that
we're going to have to pronounce, probably, I'm guessing. What are you?
Yeah. Thoughts? Yeah. I mean, I try to liken the loss last weekend to like a similar feeling just in terms of, you know, in terms of like the, I don't know if the writing on the wall is the right word, but just such a disheartening loss. Yep. And I, you know, I think back to obviously Iowa was the big one under Lovey, like yep. where you're just like, what the hell's going on here? And then you think back like Zook, maybe Minnesota Zook.
Yep. Yep.
But other than that, it's hard to even, you know, think like where they just so. They just finished so far below what your expectations were. And even if you have realistic expectations and think, hey,
yep.
we're going to lose this game, but we're going to show something. Yep. I mean, there was nothing to even cling on to. And so, you know, I think, you know, to your point, I mean, hopefully Wisconsin is unbelievable. I mean, I know the defense is great. But then, you know, you got Purdue and Minnesota. And so, you know, I think these next, if you don't have a victory these next 2 weeks, I just don't, I think it just puts the program in this just
yep.
in a terrible place. Position where, yep. yeah, I mean, cause we, you know, we can't get rid of Lovey without any, you know, without the money, we can't recruit with a dead man walking. And so,
yep.
you know, let's just hope for the best.
Yes. Yes. And that's, again, that's like, I even had people reaching out to me today at my little Q&A on Twitter and people are like, what's your short list? Who's your guy? Who are we going to hire? And all, you know, like I never, so I guess I shouldn't have said what I said earlier about pronouncing, but, like I, you know, I referenced today that I was in such a foul mood in the first half of Michigan and Teddy Greenstein said something and I, you know, about Northwestern, it made me mad. And so I tweeted something at him about, oh, it wasn't glass houses. I said something about sticks and stones. He said something to me and I said sticks and stones or whatever. And we go back and forth on Twitter. I'm just in a bad mood. And he's always been great about like, hey, this guy's an Illinois fan. And you know, like he respects the game and the, you know, all this stuff. But anyway, he ends that conversation with, okay, who's your short list? You know? And I said at the time, like, I don't do short lists until it's over. Like I hope for it to turn. I don't have the gene that everyone else seems to have. That is, if this continues any further, it's damaging the program and we're further from relevance. Like I just don't have, I can't muster up that feeling. It is a constant and never ending. God, this has to work because you know, like this just has to work. Like something has to happen. And so, go ahead.
The qubit extension didn't put you over the edge on that.
I mean, no.
That's like, probably about as close. Yes. Probably about as close as you can get.
Yes. The thing I wrote that night was like I took a picture of Jihad Ward and Mason Monheim walking off Soldier Field that night, and just said like, you know, these two guys gave their heart and soul to this program, and this you know, this university just kind of doesn't care about them, like just punting and doing this, and oh, we'll kick the can down the road, it won't hurt anything. And it just bothered me so much that night that, you know, it was that. But even then, I can muster up, okay, Bill Cubitt, you've got 17 seniors coming back next year. You have an opportunity to make a name. Like, you know, he names his son offensive coordinator and gives him a raise from $86,000 to $400,000. And even then, I'm like, oh, God, please let this work. You know, I just don't – like, I want this team to win so badly that I don't have the gene that I should have, that everybody else has, of like, no, we gotta start a campaign to make this end because it's making the season worse. I just want, you know, and maybe it's covering the players. When you talk to these guys and you look them in the eye and they want to win, you just can't turn around and say, you know what, let's, you know, I'm kind of hoping we tank right here because then it means it's over and we leave no doubt and Whitman won't have a choice. He has to do it. And, you know, like, I just don't have that in me. So it's always tricky for me because I got to go face a game like this. You know, if we lose to Purdue, it's going to get ugly. We lose to Minnesota. We lose to Rutgers. It gets epically ugly. And yet,
if we start 0-4.
Yes.
Yeah, I might have to delete the Twitter for a while.
Right. But if we start 0-4, I'm going to be like, okay, you just have to find some way to win the final five. You know, like, I just, I cling to that because I want to see every team win. That said, with all of that out of the way, what we saw just doesn't look like a team that's going to win more than two games. I don't know. Maybe, like, I think what bothered me is Wisconsin couldn't run the ball. That was not a Wisconsin offensive line, and that was not a Wisconsin tailback, and that was not their typical. If they were to play Nebraska this weekend, I think they would really struggle if Mertz was out because they just – I don't think they can maintain – I don't think they have their stuff. Their defense, awesome, but I don't think their offense is there. And if that's the case, and we couldn't move the ball, and we get shut out, and like and we give up 45, we might be in trouble. So that's probably an overreaction, but I'm scared of this game this weekend.
Yeah. I mean, you just look at the numbers, even from week one in that Purdue game, and you know, you got Bell. I think Bell had three touchdowns or something like that, and you know, Moore. I don't know if Moore is going to play or not, but if he's out there, I mean, it doesn't sound like he. I don't know. I don't know if you've heard anything more recently than I have.
But I haven't.
Know, practicing.
I feel like, okay, I just apply the Illinois rule. He's absolutely going to play. He's going to have 231 yards.
Exactly.
You know, Graham Mertz is going to play one game this year, and it's going to be this one.
So, you know,
just apply the Illinois rule, and it always works out. Just make that assumption and then adjust from there.
Yeah. And, I mean, you just think about the matchup and, you know, the passing attack of Purdue and, and our – you know, our defense or lack thereof, our secondary. Yeah. It just doesn't bode well. You know, and then I think us, you know, I think back to us beating them on their home field last year. And I don't know how much that matters, but you know, I mean, Brom usually has a few tricks up his sleeve. You know, we had the luxury of the blizzard last year, which obviously helped us. And so I don't know. It's just, it doesn't look great, but you know, maybe it was a fluke last week. Maybe we work things out. You know, maybe that defense of Wisconsin really is that good.
Yep.
It's more competitive.
The hope I have for that, I'm just not totally convinced that a walk-on QB is like the answer kind of thing. You know, who was the walk-on QB Wisconsin? Joel Stave. Was it Stave?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And, like he was their starter for, what, 2 years or whatever? And there were still games where it was like, oh, right, yeah, he's a walk-on. Like, you know, he can play a 98% game, and it's like, wow, where did this kid come from? And people should have offered him. But, like, then he doesn't really have the arm strength, and there's not much mobility. I can see why nobody offered him, you know. Like, I'm hanging my hope on, you know, maybe Plummer and O'Connell aren't really that great, and the fact that Sindelar's not back maybe opens a door to maybe some turnovers. Like, that's my thought of, like, yeah, these receivers, they're the best we'll face this year, and after we just gave up bombs to Wisconsin, we're going to do the same. But maybe they don't have the quarterback to do it? I don't know.
So, I guess here's my only thought about that. I mean, the pass – so, I mean, he was unbelievable last week.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not discounting that at all. But if you go back and you actually watch, like, Mertz wasn't – there were a few passes where you're like, okay, those are NFL passes.
Yep.
But besides that, like – there were so, I mean, it was like his fifth attempt of the game by the time he even really actually threw the ball down the field.
Yep.
And he, you know, at that point he already had a touchdown or, you know, one or two touchdowns. And it, you know, it's not like these were just unbelievable Aaron Rodgers throws where Nate Hobbs was, you know, blanketing the guy and the guy caught the ball. I mean, these were just, you and I could have gone, yep, you know, 8 for 14.
Absolutely.
And so,
yep.
That's what's more problematic to me. You know, I don't know if, you know, yep, we thought the UConn kid last year was going to be like, you know.
Yeah, maybe.
I remember thinking, man, yep, maybe, you know, maybe he's, yep, Graham Mertz.
Yep.
But he wasn't, nope, you know. And, mm-hmm, and the fact is, these were just coverage breakdowns. And, yep, I mean, we can get into all that. But that, these were just more foundational issues that were more alarming. You know, if Devin Weatherspoon gets burned on a, you know, by Bell, I have no problem with that. You know, that's going to happen.
Sure.
If Nate Hobbs is 20 yards from the nearest receiver, yep, and, you know, and,
yep,
Quan Martin standing there, like looking at him pointing, you know, that's just more problematic to me.
Yep. I think I'm like my defensive, If all four are, so if Hansen's back, if Witherspoon is back, if Gay's back, maybe that changes the calculus of this, of getting Adams back at safety, you know, but like, you know, that's the, yeah, only knob to turn, right? Like, there's no other, like, this, yeah, guy, well, should be starting. There's no other, like, oh, well, time for the young defensive line. Like, they're not ready yet. So you just can't really adjust anything else other than you hope that Gay provides some pass rush. You hope that Witherspoon, yeah, you know, performs better at corner and it allows Adams to go to safety and be better than Smith was. That's like,
yeah,
that's the only knob we can turn to say, okay, maybe it takes a step forward.
Yeah, and I think in year five, you just got to think, you know, if we're one or two players away from giving up, you know, 17 straight completions to a freshman.
Yes.
That, you know, in year five, to me, yes, that's still certainly very problematic, yep, you know, because early years, you know, I think you absolutely, you can have a player or two go down who are far better than what you have behind them, and it's more understandable. It's going to impact the entire defense, that sort of thing. In year five, you know, if we have to, you know, adjust for our, you know, cornerback being out by moving a safety over there, and then that's what leads to us giving up, you know, five passing touchdowns, and you know, I just think you got bigger issues there.
Yep.
And so I'm with you. You know, I hope, you know, I think Gay being out was big. I think Witherspoon being out was big because he, you know, he might be our best cornerback at this point.
I agree with that. Yep.
But, you know, do you, you know, I don't know. It just seems very fragile if, you know, one or two players going down is what leads to kind of this disastrous result.
Yep. And you could see some of that last year is that when the defense really started to improve mid-season, so much of it was, okay, we've got about 12 guys. So it doesn't matter if people are going to get tired. It doesn't matter if people are like, we're just,
yeah,
okay, we'll rotate the defensive line, fine. But we have three linebackers, we have two corners, and we have two safeties, and we're just going to run them, you know, 76 of 78 plays, like, you know, you know,
yep,
and we talked about it, and there was like, and what's behind this, and what, you know, who's the next safety after Stanley Green, and all that stuff, you know, maybe they can find a combination like that, but you're right, you know, okay, then what? Like, are we just, you know, you're just taping everything together to have something present for the one day, and then, you know, you assemble and glue and patch and put it up there the next, like, you know, what's really going on here? So let's go ahead.
Yeah, no. My final thought is in what's next year too. You know, because this is the senior heavy team, and if we're patching it together to get through this year, what's next year?
Yep.
So, but we can talk about that all night. So.
Right. Here's what I want to do. Let's get dark. Let's talk dark timeline, and then let's talk how it could accelerate timeline. Like, here's the parameters here, right? COVID and athletic departments across the country, especially places like Nebraska that gets $70 million revenue from game day and we get 11.9. Yeah. You know, so all these places are really, really hurting for money. Their entire athletic budget, they didn't, you know, this is a rant of mine, but people always think like colleges are making all this money and like there's all this profit. It's not profit. They have to spend it. So they're bloated to the gills, and they have 9 associate athletic directors over fencing. And, you know, it's just these massive athletic departments with big fancy buildings and fancy new facilities and all this stuff. That's where all the money goes. So because you pull away all the income from, you know, what football Saturdays would be bringing and this and that, most places, I forget who wrote the article, but some national football writer said there were 29 coaching changes last year. He predicts 5 this year. So the first parameter here is, it's very doubtful any athletic department, you know, the prediction by that guy was, I think it'll be 5 coaching changes. I think all 5 will be like group of 5 schools where they can hire a guy for $800,000. You know, like it's not going to be Texas buys out Tom Herman or something like that. So given that, okay, I mean, that timeline could get, like, if Lovey is not the guy and the recruiting continues at 13th or 14th in the conference, and then there's another year because there's no firing this year and recruiting steps further back. Like, COVID could have this whole thing in a pinch where this was an absolute, if there wasn't COVID, this is a 100% extend or fire year. And I don't think it'd be a firing. I think it'd be Lovey announces a retirement, but you know, this is an extend or fire year that now probably can't be. And if we go 2-7, then what, you know?
Yeah.
Then where does this go? So, I mean, that's a dark timeline, man. Like, that's when we start counting the years of when we think about bowling again, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think just given what you just laid out, every single Illini fan needs to just root like hell for Lovie Smith. I mean, that's the reality that we live in.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I mean, with that said, I tend to try to take a somewhat realistic approach to, you know, the circumstances at hand. And yeah, I mean, it could be very dark. But, you know, at the same time, you know, it Wisconsin might've been a fluke. You never really know.
Yep.
And maybe we bounce back with a win over Purdue, or, you know, win 2 out of the next 3, and then, you know, we're 2-2, and you got a shot at least.
Yep. Yep.
But yeah, I mean, it certainly
it's scary.
It certainly could play out. I mean, these coming 3 games, I think, are gonna
no
paint
kidding.
The picture.
Yep. Yep. Because if there's no, so you know, because then it's the. I mean, it's so screwy that, like, you know, last official visits, well, the last unofficial, like, no recruit has been able to see the Smith Center since, you know, whatever, and it's supposed to be this recruiting tool for us and this and that. So, like, everything is working in this, like, oh, man, this could get really bad. Like, what if this and what if this and, you know, what if it's 2 back-to-back last place recruiting classes, and we go 2-7 and we can't recruit to that, and we didn't recruit off the bowl game, and you know, like I don't even let myself think about it because it's a dark, dark timeline. I mean, you're a recruiting guy. Like when you see the quarterback from Springfield pick Rutgers.
to play wide receiver at Rutgers.
Yes. And what is happening? Like,
yeah. I mean, I think it's playing out in a way that isn't, you know, I've said this for years on Twitter that, you know, I think just Lovey's style of recruiting is more, he's just more laid back. You know, I think you read the stories about Fleck, you know, just every, you know, six times a day calling kids or, you know, right, whatever it is, right, that just ridiculous, you know, kind of on the other end of the spectrum. And then you'll hear about a kid who's a pretty good prospect that's probably within our wheelhouse that has, you know, maybe ties to Illinois or, you know, something like that. And, you know, the kid had a call with, you know, a position coach, and then he heard from Lovey once, and that was kind of the end of it. And so, you know, now you think you can't get these kids on campus. And so what is, I worry about what Lovey's doing kind of from his living room, you know, and just how engaged he is. And, you know, it's hard to get motivated to recruit a kid, you know, I think whenever you're Lovey's age, and, you know, I don't know what his personal plans are or anything like that, but, you know, you think about kind of an older guy recruiting,
yep,
kids that are juniors in high school that won't see the field for 5 or 6 years. And, you know, you just start to wonder about that. And, you know, then it's just only exacerbated by the fact that, you know, we could be in this 2-7 year with all the negative recruiting, all the, you know, all of that to go with it. And so, yeah, I mean, I think we're behind the eight ball and that's why I go back to, we just need to root for Lovey at this point. You know, I don't think we really have much of a choice. Yep. And so, you know, I'm biggest fan there is in the Lovey Smith fan club, but,
yep,
just crossing my fingers and hoping for the best.
Yeah, it's kind of, yeah, you mentioned Fleck, and it's like, I have had so many people, when I say some of these things on Twitter, people get so mad. But like, I got to be careful here, because at some point I'm going to be applying for a credential in Minnesota. like, how do I say this? I want to root for a coach like Lovey Smith 600 times more than I would root for a coach like PJ Fleck. And that's because of a lot of, like, I've explained to people before that I think Lovey, you know, Fleck has the famous story that the one recruit said, he put me in a room, he locked the door, he put an hourglass and said, you have 1 hour to commit to Minnesota, you know, and this and that.
Yep.
And then you just watch him, and he does his pastor of a mega church routine, and you get those same vibes as like, man, is he, I mean, sometimes I think he's sincere, but sometimes I feel like he's like manipulating these kids. Like, he's really, is that right? Is that okay? Are we all okay with that? Because that's like just a routine. And I mean, maybe he's, so I just get so uncomfortable with it. That like I want the coach who's like, I care about these kids, and I want to, you know, like I defended Lovey on that side of things. That people were like, oh, he got fired at Tampa Bay, he's just here for a couple years until a DC job opens up. I'm like, no.
Yep.
Like, the one thing people don't understand is this guy, without telling anyone, is doing all this stuff for these kids, like one-on-one meetings and mentoring them, and like, there is so much stuff that goes on behind the scenes that people just don't know. Like, a sincere man who cares about these kids. It just might be. He can't field the level of talent that we need to win, and he can't put an offense and a defense cohesively together that is a system that's going to work. And, you know, that whole side of things might not be. But I so want to root for a Lovey Smith over a PJ Fleck. So just like, like just the mention of Fleck's name is a the world is completely unfair to me because there's no way that guy should be getting like it just doesn't feel sincere, you know? Like I just, you know, it's probably bad of me to say without meeting a person personally, but you know, I'll tune into some, you know, I'll see a mega church pastor on my TV and I can get a pretty good feeling of what that guy's about. And so,
yeah,
you know, I want this to, you know, you say, you know, we all have to be Lovie Smith fans. It would be so good if this was working because it could be the thing for this program. It's just, good Lord, 45-7. Like what is there to like, how do you even think that it's headed somewhere when you start your 45-7?
Yeah.
That's my rant.
Well, I mean, he's certainly an easy guy to root for. And, you know, you do hear the stories, you know, and no cameras around or anything like that. And he's doing the right thing. And,
absolutely.
You know, if the shoe were on the other foot and it were Fleck, you know, it'd be a part of the mini series or whatever they had. So,
oh, yes.
I totally agree with you
without
there.
Without question. Yes.
Easy guy to root for. And, you know, I think my concern is, you know, the things that we would have talked about in 2016 as being the things that needed to be fixed aren't necessarily being fixed.
Yep.
And that's kind of where I start to get concerned. And, you know, I think about the cohesiveness of offense and defense. And, you know, I think that is something that needs to probably be talked about more is, you know, the Rod Smith offense with the Lovie Smith defense and, you know, do these things make sense when, you know, you have a guy in Rod Smith who, I mean, I know you focused on time of possession lately and I was looking at it.
Yep.
It's just, you know, you can't have the bend but don't break defense that, you know, is kind of lets them run their 10 plays and then you hope for the mistake and you hold them to the field goal and they play field position and that sort of thing. And then have a team that just specializes in three and out, you know.
Yep.
Not that they specialize in three, but it's just, you know, he's known for the quick strike touchdown or the, you know, he can't sustain drives.
Right.
And so
we went to a bowl last year.
Odd.
We went to a bowl and Blake Hayes had 77 punts, which was the fourth most in the country. Like,
we
fail on third down a lot. And so, yes, it's like, yes. How does this all mix and how do we get somewhere? And, you know, that's why people are always like, oh, focus on like, why is Bob McClain the offensive line coach? He has no experience. We're Illinois. If we have $300,000 to spend, go find somebody. I get all of that stuff, but like above all of it is the assembly of all of this, you know, a year five, and I've studied it and I've written about every program that had a year five leap and everything else. Like it's always this. Okay. And then everything just fell into place. And if Wisconsin would have been that, then we could last year's Wisconsin, you know, then we would be seeing this, but now we've got, you know, okay, fine. Northwestern, we were hurt, 22 players out, whatever. You're healthy, you're playing Wisconsin, and you lay an absolute egg, and it's like, poof, all that goes away.
Yep.
There's nothing left to, like, what do you even say? You know, you were talking earlier about, like, what's the feeling? Like, honestly, like, probably closest to Missouri 2009, to where, okay, everything's together, Zook's fifth year, all these seniors. We literally have a website called 7to9.com where Juice to Ben, we're promoting them both as Heisman candidates.
Yep.
And in the second quarter of Missouri game, we're like, I don't think we're winning two games. So, you know, it's just so deflating to get to that point and it doesn't happen.
Yep. I mean, I totally agree.
Yeah. So let's now talk the bright timeline. You know, there is this with Minnesota's defense looking so bad against Michigan. It does open up this, like, you know, if you beat Purdue, you could go 3-1. Like, it's not crazy, right?
Like, no, I don't think it's crazy at all. I mean, I think going into this year, we all, you know, I mean, the thing is, we all expected a loss to Wisconsin.
Right.
You know, 99% of us expected a loss to Wisconsin.
Yes.
you know, obviously we didn't expect them to lose in that fashion, but in terms of win loss, we are not off track from where 99% of us expected them to be.
Agreed.
So, I mean, I think that's the good news. And then, you know, I mean, we beat Purdue last year pretty easily. Yep. I mean, obviously there were some, you know, there were some things that played into our favor, but at the same time, it was on the road.
Yep, we played the field. You know, so we played the whole game to out how it should be. Blake Hayes was amazing. They're pinned deep.
Yep.
Tony Adams gets the pick and runs 3 yards with the touchdown. You know, like,
yeah, and I mean, yeah,
the way this whole thing is supposed to work worked.
Yeah, and there's not a we didn't have to rely on Peters really at all that game,
yep.
Which, you know, to me is like, you know, we had a good enough run game to beat them with the run game alone, yep. And so now, you know, I think. You know, on my optimistic side, we beat Purdue, and, you know, I think you could make an argument for 3-1.
Yep.
And then I think the whole thing looks differently, and people are thinking about Wisconsin, and, you know, that's just kind of in the back of our minds, but not, you know, not the topic of conversation.
Yep. So then, so if... You know, I would like to remind people this is now the looking for the best case scenario portion. Because if I don't say that, I will get so many tweets. Did you see Robert Rudin talking about 3-1? Okay, if we could get to 3-1, then you go to Nebraska, and Nebraska is probably as good of a where are you at game as Purdue is. You know, like. Purdue is what, year four of, is it year four? Yes.
Are they?
We're year five. They're year four. Nebraska is year three or four. What is Frost at?
I'm trying to think.
Four?
He's
four.
Is this four for him?
Is it? Okay, now I'm going to have to go. I got my laptop. I think, don't worry.
18, 19. I think this is three for.
This is three.
I think he.
Okay.
18, 19, 20.
Yes, I think that's right. Yeah. I think that's right. So, but those are like before the season, I kind of circled Purdue and Nebraska as okay, other rebuilding teams and Minnesota as well. Like it's year five for Fleck. So, like, or year four for Fleck. What, like, these first five games set up really well for a where are you at? Big Ten West teams who have all hired a coach since 2015. And have built and are presenting, here's what we can do. Here's what we do. Here's what we do. So, like, I feel like in that sense, I just take Wisconsin and like, well, that's not really a game where you learn. You know, they're going to get revenge and we're going to get killed. And it's the opener and we always play horrible when we go on the road the first time. And, okay, fine, throw it away. The next four games are very, like, I don't think Rutgers is that good. Like, seven turnovers is seven turnovers. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, it, UConn would win if they got seven turnovers at Michigan State. but you know, we really have a little window here of Purdue here, Minnesota here, at Rutgers, at Nebraska of, like, okay, just those four games you learn 99% of what you need to know.
Yep.
And I don't think, like, so just it feels like maybe I should pause on my despair and just say, okay, we got four games here where, all right, I think we're going to learn everything. Like,
yeah.
You know, we'll play a pass happy team. We'll play a spread team. We'll play a rush happy team. You know, like, we're going to, we'll four programs that have joined us in, can we get back to what we think we can be? And let's see what we got. And maybe we'll be surprised, because we need to be surprised, because I don't want dark timeline. I want, oh God, we're 4-1. Look at that. 4-1 with Ohio State coming to town. Like, let's go.
I totally agree. I mean, I think Purdue, I think, is a spread of seven,
yep.
I think. Six, yep. And a half or seven. Minnesota at Illinois. You know, I mean, they didn't look good. I don't even know where that'll shake out, but that's still, to me, you got a chance.
Yep.
It's not a, you know, that's not a,
yep,
18 point spread or something like that.
Yep.
Rutgers, Illinois should be favored. Theoretically.
Yeah, I think they're going to have they're going to have a 59-3 game coming up where it's like, "Oh, right. They're
Yeah.
But they are kind of like it is kind of like Brohm's first year. Like they have a older team, like
they
have whatever Chris Ash was building and it wasn't much. You know.
Yeah, and I think there were some I think there were fifth years that came in or know, immediately eligible kids, so he kind of went the Brohm route.
Yep.
As opposed to the Lovey route. So,
as opposed to sorry, upperclassmen, it's time to start over.
sorry, Keyshawn Vaughn. So, and then you got, I mean, Nebraska, again, you know, that's probably, you've at least got a shot. And so, you know, in a perfect world, you're 4-1. No one's thinking about Wisconsin anymore.
Yep. But so the bright timeline is that. And then on the recruiting side, I think the only hope there, and it's probably legitimate hope, is, you know, the NCAA, the council who was charged with studying the transfer thing came out today and said, yes, we're going to recommend to the main board that we move forward with this. And 95% of the time when they do that, they vote on it and it goes through. So, like, the big hurdle was cleared today that free agency basically starts in January. That, you know, if you think Lovey went to transfers before, this could be what happens next year. 17 new players all inserted directly in the starting lineup because they're juniors and seniors somewhere else. And they, you know, you like Rod Perry? How about 13 more Rod Perrys kind of thing, you know? And so the only, you know, I think you're right. And I think in a PJ Fleck lock a kid in the closet world, Lovey's never going to do that. And he might not be that recruiter. And he might be in his 60s now and not interested in the 6 phone call a day hustle. So the only real hope there is, you know, I've said transfer portal U before, like we're talking like transfer portal U, like, you know, we get this weird year where there's no limit on scholarships and who knows what 2022 recruits will do because, you know, if it goes back to 85 scholarships the next year, there might be like 5 open for their class because everybody has is delayed by a year. So who knows what happens, but you know, the only hope at that point is like it is a free market and the FCS plus the, you know, group of 5 are feeder schools, minor league teams where you need a left tackle, find the best left tackle in the Sun Belt and say, hey kid, how'd you like to play in the Big Ten? So, you know, maybe that's the answer. It's not like, you know, all of my build and give a guy 30 starts and then, you know, you, like all of that has to be thrown out the window when you say, oh, let's just plug in 17 transfers into our starting line, you know, but, you know, maybe there is this, we've established a transfer identity. And if there's no sit out years for anyone anymore, that could, you know, explode.
But yeah. I mean,
again,
and
it's
then
hope
you,
and
you
wish.
Know, yeah. And when you think, you know, some of these kids that are seniors now could come back, which could help. And then, you know, with the COVID rules and then, you know, at least a short-term fix. And then, I mean, you know, you just start thinking like Bill Snyder at Kansas State, I think is about the only, you know, what you have to kind of point to with, with the transfers that come in and, you know, you win 8 games with them every single year.
Yep. He built, and, you know, JUCO only and
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you start thinking about that, and obviously, you know, there have been a lot of kids that have had success in Illinois, and, you know, you point to, like, Imadu Bebe being, I mean, arguably, like, the face of the program at this point.
Yep.
I mean, if we had one.
You're right.
And, you know, he was kind of at the end of the bench at USC, and so, you know, maybe you point to him and you hope for some luck, and, you know, and then maybe a kid like Roderick Perry has that same trajectory. After this year. And so you never know. I mean, I, you know,
go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, like, I even think that there is the way Lovey recruits resonates with a 21-year-old and not a 17-year-old. I think that's a very real thing. Because, like, the Rod Perry thing was he's down to Florida and Illinois, and it was a relationship with Lovey over Mullen because Lovey would call him and Mullen didn't, kind of thing. You know, whatever the specific was that he said on that call. But, you know, it was very, like, you know, he said something on the call, like, I could just feel that this guy cared about me and would take care of me. You know, my coach was really great about telling me, like, this is the best thing for your career. You need to go take this next step. And I think I found a guy who's going to care about that. And I just feel like it's, you know, what I was a punk kid when I got here in 1991 as an 18-year-old freshman. And I was a bit of a more mature, thoughtful adult when I left here after 5 years in 1996. And every kid goes through that. And I feel like those older guys do respond to Lovey's pitch, or at least his, like, you know, his, I'm going to care about you and we're going to help develop you as a guy and as a, you know, and all this stuff. So, again, we're in the hope zone here, and we're in the how could it possibly work, because dear God, it has to work. And that's probably it. It would have to be the next four games are a revelation, and the transfer thing could be legitimately sustainable.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, you think about some of the kids that are transferring from the, you know, Miamis and USCs of the world that have sat the bench for 2 or 3 years and, you know, we're probably the next best thing coming out of high school. And so I don't blame them for sort of, you know, taking to Lovey's approach a bit more, you know, with him being more of an even keel kind of straight shooter. And so it's not surprising to me that he's had some success going to, you know, those types of programs and pulling the transfers away. And so, you know, I mean, maybe he can sustain it for a while. Because I think that's probably our, in terms of like ceiling, I think that's probably our best bet for like the highest ceiling that Lovey can reach is just knocking it out of the park with some of these transfers.
Yep. Yeah. Because I mean, on the flip side, when you see, is the kid's name Rochelle, the kid from Springfield?
Rashad Rochelle.
Yeah. When you see him, like, okay, Shiano, I'll sign up with Rutgers before they had done anything in the first year of a rebuild, that they're at a lower point and we're an hour and 15 minutes away. And, you know, and we've seen that happen time and time again. And if that's not going to happen, well, what do you do? I mean, the only answer is transfer. Like, it's the only answer.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember seeing the Rochelle kid's dad or somebody on Twitter posting highlights to like random Garrick McGee posts when the kid was like a, you know, seventh grader.
You are like a freak. I love it. I love it.
I'm not even joking. Yeah. I remember, don't ask me why I was getting ready to comment on Garrick McGee post, but either way, I remember seeing that kid and, and then the name popped up and I'm like, this is that same kid from, you know, where his dad is like begging Illinois to offer the kid, you know, and then we wind up offering after Minnesota and Rutgers, and he chooses Rutgers, and you know.
Okay, let me ask you a question. I think that's how I found your Twitter account, with some football recruiting stuff, because there's just not much out there on, you know, discussing Illinois football recruiting. But like, what, like, be as honest as you can. I mean, it has to be really. You know, we just talked about what Lovey is and how he leans on transfers and how the classes always develop late. And, you know, like that for a junkie like yourself, that has to be some of the worst drugs ever fed to a junkie, right? Like, I mean, like that has to be hard. Like, I'm not that guy. I like following football recruiting, but it's like, I want to more dig into the people we got and evaluate it. And like, here's where he fits and that. I don't get way deep like you do. So it has to be rough, right?
I mean, it's been rough. There have been, you know, I just think back to, I mean, and maybe that's part of like my angst with Lovey, or maybe that's been part of my angst with Lovey over the years, is just seeing, you know, some of the kids that have slipped away, that, you know, it's just like, this guy is right within our grasp. Like, how do you lose this kid? But But yeah, I mean, the transition from, you know, that first Lovey class, which is pretty solid. And, you know, he came out and said, I want to do better than this every single year. And, you know, Sternquist was, you know, let go, or he moved along, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, because yep. it wasn't good enough. You know, to me, that was like, I'm like, all right, here we go. You yep. know, he's building with high school kids. This is, you know, I agree with everything he's saying. Then we just took this complete, just philosophical pivot. Kirkland's named the head of recruiting.
It becomes Evaluation Central.
Yep. And, you know, it no longer mattered. You know, all of the messaging changed. You know,
yep.
at first it was, you know, we finished what, like 38th or something in, you know, Lovey's first year, and that wasn't good enough. Two, we're not even going to talk about where Illinois is ranked because James Kirkland knows more than,
yep.
you know, the guy at Rivals or the guy at Scout or whoever it is. And yep. so, yeah, I mean, the shift has been difficult, and, you know, yeah. I think that's just what raised kind of early red flags to me was like, you know, are you trying to change the narrative because it's going to work, or are you trying to change the narrative to sort of suit the reality of the situation that you know, you're just not able to keep up.
Yeah. And then it accelerated in the other direction very quickly. Like, you know, there was, you know, Virtus hops on, and then real early in the class, you get Beeson and Williams, and, you know, it's this dramatic shift back to like, wait, like, and, you know, your Patterson thing. Oh, we should talk about this. Okay. You're great. Of course, you should get an A. You should get a 99%. I should get a 51% on my test, because you and I went back and forth a little bit that I did not agree with the Patterson hire, and you had promoted it for 2 years. Like, you know, like you need credit for that. Like, I feel like I need to apologize to you for something. Like, man, I didn't think he would land. You know, I'm like, what? Just because he's here, then suddenly a 5-star is gonna be like, oh, okay, I'll go to Illinois. Well, yes, that's what happened.
Yeah, I mean, even a blind squirrel finds a nut, I guess. But
that's
but,
right.
You know, I don't know. I just think you look at the staff that Lovey put together initially, and I think everyone's concern was who's going to recruit. You know, is Lovey going to recruit? You know, I think back to the Zook press conference when he was introduced, and he had already been on, I think, you know, I think he'd already scheduled a visit with like Derek McPherson or somebody
yep.
like that.
Yep.
So he had a four-star coming to campus. There was the like Abdu Nafi kid that it was like the 5-star JUCO yep. who yep. was already kind of, we expected to land basically the day that Zook was hired.
Yep.
And then you got, you know, you contrast that with Lovey, and he's like figuring out how to download Twitter, and, you know, and that's not to say, you know, it's not to knock him, because, you know, but whatever, but it was just such a different sort of style between like the Zook staff and the Lovey staff. And the first thing with Lovey is who's going to recruit. So he hires Hardy Nickerson as a defensive coordinator who had never recruited. Yeah. I mean, you can kind of go through the list and it's like, wait, who's actually done this before?
Right.
And so to me, it was just very obvious. You've got to have somebody in there. I mean, the biggest deficiency with the staff really through the first, you know, 4 years or whatever, 3 years, was who the hell's going to recruit. And so to me, it was just like, you know, you've seen some success with hiring of kids, high school coaches. And, you know, we didn't stand a chance in Chicago. So it's like, where are we going to focus? You know, Lovey had some momentum down there, probably thanks in large part to Patterson as a high school coach. And so you think, bring them on and just see what happens, you know, make them tell Patterson no, rather than, you know, sending Gil Bird down there or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's been obviously very successful.
Yep. Yep. So it's been such a weird wave of like you said, you know, 2018, you're like, okay, let's go. And it's going to be better, and they're going to hire more recruiters, and, you know, and then it's no, we're evaluation. And then you've yep. like get locked into that. I'm like, okay, well, they're trying to fill needs and 7 defensive backs and this, and then they burst onto the scene with, you know, Virtus, you know, they get an IMG with Virtus, and then they turn to, you know, all these other things, and Beeson, Williams, Cooper, Ford transfer, you know, like, you know, you start accelerating the other direction, and then you just get on board with that, and it shifts back the other way to, No, we're gonna be a little more picky about this class, and we're gonna wait later. And it's just like you just try to you just can't keep up. That's why I made this switch to like, okay, you know what? The best thing I can do, because the first year I made a spreadsheet, and I just went through Rivals and 24/7, like whoever had an Illinois offer, I'm like, okay, we're after this guy, we're after this guy, and I'm like evaluating their film and ranking them, and like I'm put this on the side, I'm a recruiting guy now, and this and that. And it just fizzled to where it's like, I have so many names on this list that we're not even talking to anymore. Like, this is pointless. I'm not even doing anything. So I switched to this, like, you know what? If I'm going to do deep evaluations like this, it should be with actual guys who are coming here. So I'm going to shift to, I'm gonna do real deep evaluations when somebody commits. And then at the end of that, I will have a list of, I think these are the good guys and those are the bad guys. And probably the worst thing to happen was I got kind of lucky with that class. And I like Sidney Brown and Daniel Barker and all this stuff. And, you know, my ratings turned out better than Rivals. And I was like, get a little arrogant and all this stuff. And so that became my thing of like, okay, I'm gonna switch how I do recruiting. I'm gonna wait till I have a name, and then I'm gonna evaluate that name. And we get to this year, and it's like I have a friend who keeps a spreadsheet, and I believe right now I have, like, with my little Tom Cruise ratings or whatever, this class is lower than the Cubitt class, like in average Tom Cruise's. I would have never thought in a million years we would have a class like that deep again, and here we are. So I just don't, like, it's just so hard to, like, it's so hard to keep.
Yeah,
up,
and I mean,
you know.
No, I totally agree. And I mean, the answer is probably somewhere in the middle. You know, I mean, I don't think you should necessarily chase the highest rated kid every single time if you truly believe in your evaluation. And, you know, I mean, frankly, your head scout should be better than the guy at Rivals or the guy at 247 or 24/7, whatever, you know. And so there's certainly a component of that works, and, you know, and build, you know, some of the classes if the right transfer makes sense, certainly add the transfer, and then, you know, you're certainly are going to need some of the headliners of the class. And so I think it's just a balance, but it just seems like the philosophy has shifted pretty significantly over Lovey's tenure, and I think that's what's led to the roster kind of looking the way that it does, to where, you know, we start talking about next year and it's like, who do we have, you know, who's coming back, like, what's this going to look like? Yep. And so, you know, it's kind of,
and I think,
all probably a result of that.
And I think the Wisconsin game was, you know, 'cause I've said to people, okay, well, you know, what's after this? Well, you've got to get, you know, basically the next team centers around most of those 2019 guys, you know, it's Beeson and Williams and Cooper, and, you know, you toss Ford in there and all, you know, the issue is, you know, Ford didn't have many targets, one target, and didn't play much.
He played 14. I think he played 14 snaps.
Yeah. Beeson played, but to the point where Witherspoon is out and they move Adams from safety.
Yeah.
And what is that?
Yeah, I mean, essentially Derek Smith's a better option at safety than Marquez Beeson is at cornerback.
Right. And so it's like, I mean, we don't know yet. And the players are young, and who knows where they'll end up in their careers. But with your first signal of at least how the coaches are handling it or how they're doling out snaps, it's like, oh, wait. Again, I'm not trying to blast the four stars in the 2019 class, but
yeah, no, certainly not.
Tariq Barnes is in front of Cooper, and and what you just said with Smith, Beeson, Witherspoon, you know, the fact that Witherspoon, an add-on recruit that we found at a JUCO in August, who's playing in a game 3 weeks after he got to campus and committed, you know, like the fact that he's in front of Beeson, was like, whoa, like, wait, like, hold up. You know, so there's all this weird, like, you know, if that's the next team, okay, well, is Avery part of that team? Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, you know, all these big names that were supposed to be next, it's just, yeah, I mean.
Yeah. Did you look at the snap counts or anything like that? Did you keep track of that? Because I was shocked at some of the personnel.
Yeah, I looked. I don't think I looked at any snap counts. I think I just skimmed the participation chart.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was obsessed. Oh God, can I do a little rant here? I know we're going long.
Yes. Okay. Absolutely.
I'm gonna rant. You ready for this?
Here
we go.
Do it.
I'm gonna do it in 1 minute. I'm watching the game. I see on a punt return, punt coverage, not a punt return, punt coverage. I see number 81 go in on the tackle. I tweet, who is number 81? Like, I know this roster upside down. There's no 81 on this team. Like, who is 80? Like, did we move some, like, receiver? You know, they'll do that sometimes the first game. Like, okay, we're going to move you from 25 to 24 because if the two of you are on special teams, you can't be out there with Kirby Joseph, blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, who's 81? I get the response that 81 is Brian Hightower, who puts on a different jersey for punt coverage. So picture this. It's third down and six. Brian Hightower is out there. We throw the pass. It is batted down. It is now punt time. He's the gunner on the punt team. If he was in on the third down pass, he has to go to the sideline and get a jersey and pull it over his head and get it over his shoulder pads and run out there and be number 81? Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, why not just say, you know what, Brian, you're number 14 and our punter is 14. We want you on punt coverage. How would you like to just be number 81? And I guess maybe 14 is important to him or whatever. And I know kids and they want, you know, and then we offer numbers and Isaiah was going to be number one and Terry Hawthorne was offered the number one. And I get it. It's part of recruiting. You got to offer these things and this and that. But somebody described to me a guy who's part of our offensive rotation at wide receiver, pulling on a different jersey to go chase a punt and then taking that jersey off. I don't understand. That's my rant.
No, I totally agree. Yeah, I was surprised by the participation chart.
Yes.
Insert, you know, Calvin Avery playing less snaps than Johnny Newton. You know, it's just like, what? You know, I mean, Jakari Norwood, who's maybe probably our weakest in pass blocking, had, I think, two carries and played like 15 snaps, which means he was pass blocking on
13 of 15
13 passes. Yep. I mean, it's, you know, you just go through it and you're just like, what? You know, Luke Ford, who we heard all about for years at this point.
Yeah. I deleted. I started a free Luke Ford, like, tweet, but I deleted it on Friday night. Like, I don't want to be that guy. I'm never that guy. I don't want to go.
I'm still anonymous. I can carry that.
Okay, good. Nobody will show up at your door.
Yeah.
Okay. Look, we're going long here. And I appreciate it. We're longer than I promised you. So let's get to some final thoughts. Like, I mean, I'll go first and let you have the final word. Like, obviously, this game, and I think I established it in my head during this conversation, the next four games are everything. Like, everything. And especially this week, like, it just has to, from the opening snap, be better and be the fifth year team we expected to see. It just has to be. Like, this is, I said it on Monday that this is the single biggest game of Lovey's tenure. Actually, I said career the first time I said this, and that's, it's probably not as big as the 2006 Super Bowl, but
maybe number two.
Right. But yeah. This is of his tenure, this is the biggest game. It has to be one of those game two, everything improves. Wow, we got a lot better, because it just can't go down that road. I can't walk down that road with it. It's going to be really hard. So this is a massive, massive game, and I'm just clinging to the hope that it looks better.
Yep.
What's your final word?
I agree with all of that. I mean, I think, you know, I think we're past the point of, like, the moral victory, you know. So I think if we come out and say, hey, Wisconsin appears to have been a fluke, but we still lost to Purdue by four, I don't know if that gets us there.
Yep.
You know, I don't know if it gets me there anyway. Yep. You know, I think it's put up or shut up time. You know, this is the year that that even that, you know, the staunchest Lovey defenders have pointed to this year. Lovey himself has pointed to this year. And so, you know, at this point we're here and, you know, we're probably even more upperclassmen heavy than Lovey anticipated we would be when he started pointing to this year. And so, you know, I think these next, yeah, I mean, these next few games are going to dictate kind of where we go.
Yep.
So let's just sit back and hope for the best.
Cross some fingers and yeah, I'm going to be sweating in the press box. I'll be pacing. Like, I'm going to be so nervous going into this thing. Cause I just need this to work. I need it to be better. So listen, man,
it needs to work.
I appreciate this. Thank you for coming on with me. Let's see if we, like, I'm just going to think about the golden timeline and not the dark, dark room with no lights and everything as we head into 2021. So thanks for doing this.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks.